Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
And now, here is Walter Bingham.
Hello and welcome to the first Walter Bingham file of 2019. It is January the 8th, and in our calendar, the 2nd of Shvat 5779. I am Walter Bingham. Today's total program is a self-profile of Donald Trump, in his own words, seen through the prism of how he presents his presidency and policies. It's a revealing insight into his psyche, how he sees himself in the context of the presidency. It's important to listen to all of it, because it gets more interesting as he speaks. After you heard it, please write to me to walter@israelnewstalkradio.com of what you've learned from this about President Trump. Is he egocentric or genuinely absorbed by the well-being of his country? Is he a vehement isolationist or a sterling defender of needy nations? Is he a permanent friend of Israel or only a transient seeker of American interests? President Trump's first cabinet meeting of 2019 was open to the press, and here is an edited account of what they heard. It is as if he spoke to himself, giving his real thought free rein.
2019, it's going to be a very exciting year. I think it's going to be a very good year. Some people think it'll be controversial and tough, and it probably will, but we're going to get a lot done. I think we can work with the Democrats actually and get quite a bit done. We're looking at infrastructure, we're looking at many things that can happen. I think that both sides want. We just did a very big and very highly touted criminal justice reform bill, and that's a very bipartisan thing, and we finish off the year with that. We had a tremendous year in terms of achievement, whether it's regulation cuts or tax cuts or anything else you can name. So many things we did, judges, including two Supreme Court judges, and many federal bench judges. We've had quite a time, and we're going to have, I think, six more years of great success, but I think this coming year is going to be tremendous. Every day, Border Patrol encounters roughly 2,000 illegal immigrants trying to enter our country. 2,000 a day, and that's a minimum. Every week, 300 Americans are killed by heroin, the vast majority of which comes across through our southern border. Our southern border is like a sieve, and we're going to have physical barriers. It's never going to be able to be stopped. Too much money is being made. Last month, 20,000 minors were illegally smuggled into the United States. In the last 2 years, ICE officers arrested 235,000 criminals who were able to come in over the years.
Always challenging the status quo. Hello, I'm Rod Bryant on Beyond the Matrix here at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. I want to encourage you to listen each week, every Wednesday at the same time, for an amazing show that will challenge you, inform you, and inspire. News, views, and wisdom for the nations. Here on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. Don't forget, Beyond the Matrix every week, Wednesday, here on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com.
And now, here is Walter Bingham.
We have a very tough border. I think you see that even last night, where people charged the border, tried to get through, but they couldn't because we have a wall up. If they knew they had a physical barrier, if they knew they had a wall, if they knew they had something that's going to stop them, they would have never come up in the first place. When you see children getting sick, they get sick on the trail up. It's a horrible journey. And if they knew they couldn't get through, they wouldn't even start. Another one's forming in Honduras. We very much lowered the payments to Honduras and to a few other countries that are not playing right, because there's no reason for caravans to be forming. They shouldn't allow it to happen. The United States needs a physical barrier to stop illegal immigration, the flow of drugs and crime. You have human traffickers. Think of it, human traffickers. They kidnap people, they steal people, and they sell people. Because of the internet, it's the highest it's ever been in history, and this is a world problem. But the southern border is a very, very highly used place by people that do human trafficking. There's a reason why politicians and wealthy people build walls around their houses and their compounds. President Obama recently built a wall around his compound, and I don't blame him.
Now his defense of the partial government shutdown that's now in its 12th day.
We're in a shutdown because Democrats refuse to fund the border security. I said over the weekend to a number of people that the wheel, the wall, there are some things that never get old. It's never going to change. The wall is your number one point of security. We've done tremendous amounts of renovation of existing walls and fences and brought them back into brand new condition. So we have a lot of brand new fencing. But if we didn't have a form of barrier up last night, you would have had a lot of people. All those people would have been able to come through. We're in the shutdown because of the fact the Democrats are looking to 2020. They think they're not going to win the election. I guess a lot of signs point to the fact that they're not going to win the election. But they view this as an election point for them. But I'm not thinking about the politics. I'm thinking about what's right and what's wrong. We need a physical barrier. I know about every form of safety that you can have. And it's all good, but it's just very minor compared to the power of a wall. Even when you have the soldiers who have been fantastic, we've had our military. But when you have the military, you have Border Patrol, you have ICE. You have 2,000 miles. You have anywhere from 500 to 600 miles where you need the barrier. Some of it we've now completed. But we need barrier because you can't put a soldier every 100 yards if people are going to go right through. There's nothing you can do about it unless you're willing to build a wall. And walls work. In Israel, as you know, they built a wall. Prime Minister Netanyahu said 99.9% it works. And it would with us too. And would have much less of a problem. And we'd save money on a monthly basis. Probably would pay for itself in a month or two because we lose pretty close to $250 billion on illegal immigration. The House, as you know, approved $5.6 billion. And that's a very small price to pay for total security on the southern border. The drugs alone that nobody can even calculate, it's such a big number. The money you'd save just on drug and helping families where all of this horrible stuff doesn't come through on the southern border, right there you'd save a lot. But we have ICE and we have Border Patrol. They're going to make a plea for the wall. They need the wall. They can't do it without the wall. All they can do is add many, many more men and women. Now, the Democrats in the bill want $12 billion additional for foreign aid. $12 billion over the $54 billion. Think of it. In many cases, people don't even know the name of the country. They know nothing about the country, but they won't approve $5.6 billion for a wall that's going to pay for itself almost on a monthly basis. It's just politics, folks. It's purely politics. We have a lot of loopholes, whether it's catch and release, the world's most ridiculous loophole. You catch somebody and then you release them. Now, what we're doing is we're catching and retaining. The problem is we have to build vast places for these people to stay that we're catching, and it's physically not possible, nor is it possible even cost-wise. You have the visa lottery system where we bring people into our country based on a lottery. We want to end all of this nonsense, so they pick them out of a jar. We want to pick people to come into our country on the basis of merit and talent. That all of the companies that are moving in, we have large numbers of companies, more than we've seen in many years. The companies that have left our country are coming back. You see, our job numbers are great. We need people to come in, but we can't have these loopholes. These loopholes are crazy.
Next, he speaks about the thousands of unaccompanied children who've been smuggled into the United States, mainly from Central America. The project is called DACA.
We are all for DACA. The Republicans are for doing something with DACA, but it's been so misreported. We had the confines of a deal. The $25 billion didn't just cover a wall. It covered a lot of border security. We have a lot of that. It's been covered very incorrectly, but it's confusing to a lot of people. But we were close to having a DACA deal, and then we had a judge rule from the Ninth Circuit, and he said DACA was okay, even though when President Obama signed it, he essentially said, well, probably can't sign this, probably not legal, but I'm going to sign it anyway. And so everybody thought that it was going to be easily overturned by the judge. And the judge amazingly ruled in favor of that signing, even though President Obama didn't think it was going to hold up as he signed it. And now it's going to the Supreme Court of the United States. We had a deal pretty close to being done. And a lot of people say I backed away from that deal. I didn't back away. The minute the judge overruled the case and they allowed DACA, they didn't answer the calls. They said, prove that. We won the case. Why should we make a deal with DACA? I think it's going to be overwhelmingly overturned in the United States Supreme Court. Nobody thinks that should have happened. We think it was a fluke, and it was a disgraceful situation. If we win that case, we'll be easily able to make a deal on DACA and the wall as a combination. I think they're foolish if they don't want to make a deal with DACA, because if we get overridden, that means everybody that's been here has to leave the country. So there are a lot of things going on. We're very proud of what we've done with respect to the wall and the renovation that we've done, and that continues to go on. That's the money that we were given. I want to thank the military, because the military has been fantastic. We've been working with Pat Shanahan, who is acting Secretary of Defense, who has been such a pleasure to work really hard over the last 4 or 5 weeks. And so much has been done.
Now, another change of subject.
As you know, I just got back from Iraq. We had a fantastic meeting with the generals and the Syria situation. I mean, I'm the only person in the history of our country that could really decimate ISIS. Say we're bringing the troops back home over a period of time, but everybody gives me credit for decimating ISIS. So we do that, and we say we're going to bring the troops back home where they belong. I've been campaigning on that for a long time before I won. A big part of my campaign, I want to bring our troops back. Going off in 19 years in the area, but I'm going to bring them home from Syria. So I'm the only one that can do that and get bad publicity. They were supposed to be there for 3 to 4 months, and they ended up being there for 5 years. So that's a little bit different than you thought. And we have done a real job, but we are continuing to fight. We never let anybody down, and there was a lot of misinterpretation. But I think you'll see at the end, that's working out. But what we're doing is the right thing to do. And in many respects, it's very exciting because I like winning. When I took over Syria, Syria was a mess, riddled with ISIS. And now everybody says it's down to 1% of the land. You could even say less. But we also have to have other countries fighting ISIS. Russia and Iran, we're helping them. Everything we do over there helps them. Let them fight ISIS too. They want to spend money in our country. But we've had a tremendous success in Syria. We're slowly bringing people back, and we are doing something that, frankly, if I would have told you 2 years ago when we first came into office that we would have had that kind of success, nobody would have believed it. They would have said, you're exaggerating. It's not possible. But we're down to final blows, and so we have a lot of exciting things to talk about militarily. We've had a lot of victories. I just got a great letter from Kim Jong-un. We've made a lot of progress with North Korea and Kim Jong-un. We've really established a very good relationship. A lot of good things are happening. Look, it's been this way for 80 plus years. We had our meeting 6 months ago. We'll probably now have another meeting. He'd like to meet. I like to meet. But we've established a very good relationship. We're given no credit for it. You know, frankly, if another administration came in instead of this administration, namely Mike and myself and the group around this table, you'd be at war right now. You'd be having a nice, big, fat war in Asia. And instead of that, we're getting along fine. I'm not in any rush. All I know is there's no rockets, there's no testing. We have somebody that I really think wants to get onto economic development and making a lot of success and money, frankly, for his country. Because North Korea has tremendous economic potential, and we'll help them out, too. And so I look forward to our meeting with Chairman Kim. We'll be setting it up in the not-too-distant future.
Back to illegal immigration.
We're one of the only countries that, where if you step 1 foot into our country, you now have a court case. Our country, you end up with lawyers and judges, and it's so ridiculous. This is the system that we have, and nobody pointed it out until we came along. So you end up in a court case to tell somebody, normally it's like, hey, you're on our land. We don't want you, and you have to come through legally. Get out. No, we catch, we do paperwork, we bring them to court. You can never have enough judges because you're talking about these tens of thousands of people. You end up in trials. But the trials don't take place because it's impossible to hold all of this. Is by these idiotic laws given to us mostly by the Democrats that we could change in 1 hour if people got together. I think we have close to 800,000 pending lawsuits. And what happens, these people disappear into the United States, never to show up for their case, which ends up coming back in about 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, and even longer. It is the most ridiculous system. We should be able to say, sorry, you can't come in. You have to come in legally. What we have done with asylum and all of this, and it's destroying our country. And I think, honestly, if I didn't come along, nobody would even be talking about it. And it would be just as bad. but our country gets eaten alive by what's happening at our southern border. So we've got to do something about it, and we're doing it now, and that's what we're doing. And one of the things we can do is the wall. One of the other things I'd like to mention is I had a very successful meeting about a month ago with President Xi, president of China, and he and I had a meeting that was going to be 45 minutes. It lasted close to 4 hours. It was very successful. One of the things I asked him to do was fentanyl, if you would criminalize it, because it's not criminal, and China has very strong criminal penalties. It's called the death penalty.
Shalom, everybody. Making a difference often takes just one moment and one person at a time. I am Orly Benny Davis, your show host on Israel News Talk Radios from Jerusalem with love. You'll be hearing people talking about politics, religion, social issues, and making a better tomorrow. Join me, Orly Benny Davis, for God and Country. From Jerusalem with love.
Wednesdays on Israel News Talk Radio.
And now, here is Walter Bingham.
If you would criminalize fentanyl, it would really help us because we're losing 80,000 people a year with fentanyl. A football stadium full of people a year taking this horrible drug, most of which comes out of China. And he's agreed to criminalize it. That was a big statement. He agreed immediately. And by the way, it wasn't a long negotiation. It was really a negotiation on trade, which is coming along very well. We'll see what happens. But before I started with trade, I talked about fentanyl. And he agreed to criminalize it at the highest level. I assume death penalty. So that's going to be put into effect fairly soon. And that should have an amazing impact on the fentanyl coming into our country. So I want to thank President Xi of China. I have to say that it would be a lot easier if I never took up this issue, if I just left it the way it was, where people stream into the country. You look at the crimes, you look at what we're doing now. We're taking out thousands and thousands of people. As an example, MS-13, the gang. It's a brutal gang, a vicious gang. They love using knives because they're far more painful than guns. And what they do to people is incredible. And we're moving them out by the thousands. People don't talk about that. They came here over years. And they've taken over towns in Long Island and other places. But MS-13 and other gangs were getting them out. And ICE and Border Patrol have done an incredible job. I've been hearing 11 million. I've been hearing 12 million. But I said, does it ever increase or go down? No, it's 11. Nobody knows. It's probably 30, 35 million people. They would flow in mostly from the southern border. And a lot of problems were caused, including problems to our educational systems, to our hospital systems. And our strong economy makes it even more difficult because our country's doing better by far than any other country in the world from an economic standpoint. We're the talk of the world. We had a little glitch in the stock market last month, but it's still up, I guess, around 30% from the time I got elected. It's going to go up once we settle trade issues. It's got a long way to go. The trade deals we're making are fantastic for our country. Whether it's China, Mexico, Canada, South Korea, we started negotiations with Japan. They're all one-way streets. They were bad for our country, good for their countries. We're changing that. We were taken advantage of by so many countries on our military. We're providing all they want, and they're not helping us. They're not doing anything toward helping us monetarily. It's disgraceful. I've been saying it for years, disgraceful. We're giving military protection to countries that are very wealthy, and they're not doing anything for us. You can call them allies if you want. And we have some great allies, but a lot of our allies were taking advantage of our taxpayers and our country. We can't let that happen. I couldn't get other people to understand it. They couldn't understand it. They didn't get what I was saying. So we're very proud of the job we're doing. I'm very proud of the people around this table.
Now, healthcare.
We've gone through a big process, and I think you're going to see a tremendous reduction in drug prices. And a lot of great work was done, along with Secretary Acosta, who has created some incredible healthcare programs, cooperative programs, where the price of healthcare has really gone down much far below Obamacare, far below, and some really great programs that people are signing up by hearing tremendous numbers. Yeah. We've set up some incredible healthcare programs that are far better than Obamacare and a lot less expensive.
More about his pet subject, illegal immigration.
The children are coming up and they're very sick by the time. These are young children and they're forced to come up. Remember this, the coyotes. These are bad ones. The coyotes. But not stupid. They know our laws better than the people that wrote them. The coyotes are using children to gain access into this country. They're using these children. They're not with families. They're using the children. They're taking the children. And then they dispose of the children after they've done this. But we want to stop it. Secretary, if I could ask you to just talk a little bit about the children's situation and how sick some of these children are by the time they get to the border.
Sure, Mr. President. Thank you. We at HHS have a role in addressing the tragic consequences of this broken system through caring for these unaccompanied alien children, or UACs. These are minors who arrive at the border without their parents. Traveling to the U.S. border is extremely dangerous, with minors suffering physical, mental, or sexual trauma on the way to this country. Parents should not send their kids on this journey. It's a dangerous act. It is endangering your children. Unfortunately, more and more minors have been arriving at our border over the last year. When UAC are apprehended at the border, the Department of Homeland Security takes them into custody. DHS then refers them to HHS, where we then select a grantee to care for them until we can release them to a suitable sponsor. In 2017, we received approximately 29,000 unaccompanied children. In calendar year 2018, we received approximately 51,000 unaccompanied alien children referrals, almost double from the previous year. Currently, there are almost 13,000 unaccompanied alien children in our care, and we expect that number to rise during the new year. We brought more capacity online to address the situation, almost doubling our capacity in the past year. But having to continually expand capacity is simply a symptom of a broken system. Caring for unaccompanied alien children in an appropriate environment is also incredibly expensive. Care for UAC in fiscal year 2018 cost about $2 billion just for that. And we expect something similar for this coming year unless the situation is addressed. Imagine if we secured our border and we didn't have to spend that $2 billion caring for these kids, what we could do with that $2 billion. We also have had to provide technical assistance and surge capacity to help address medical needs of both adult and children migrants when they arrive in DHS facilities. We're proud of the standards that we set for the care of these kids in the Unaccompanied Alien Children Program, but this is a tragic, unsustainable situation that will continue until our immigration system is fixed. As the President mentioned, we need a system that discourages parents from working with smugglers to bring minors into our country on this dangerous journey, and we need it now. And I also want to note, Mr. President, that great work you did with President Xi on getting fentanyl scheduled so that it's a crime there to cut down on the flow of fentanyl to this country. If we do not have border security on our southern border, it's going to redirect to Mexico, and it's going to come in from there and keep killing American citizens, even with China scheduling and stopping the flow from China. We'll get it out of Mexico if we don't get this border secured with a wall.
Now a few words from Vice President Mike Pence.
Having spent the Christmas break here in Washington along with you, I want to thank you for the strong stand you've taken for border security. Not just because you said you would, but because as the cabinet and the nation looking on today can see, you recognize that we have a crisis at our southern border. And we think the tragedy of Officer Singh, a legal immigrant to this country, being struck down by an illegal immigrant at the time of the Christmas holiday. We think of the videos that the American people woke up to today of a large assault on our border that required our border patrol to deploy tear gas. This is the information we are made aware of every day, but you bringing it before the American people and being willing to take a strong stand to shut down the government until we secure the funding to build a wall and bring about the kind of changes that will achieve true border security, I know is something that millions of Americans appreciate, and I personally appreciate your stand. You gave the numbers before, but they're worth repeating. 17,000 criminals have been apprehended attempting to come into this country. Since this administration took office, 235,000 criminal illegal aliens have been apprehended by Immigration and Customs Enforcement in this country. We think about the tragedy along the border that the secretaries both spoke about today, but we think of the human cost to the American people and our society by not addressing this issue in a meaningful way. Mr. President, you directed our entire team to reach out to Democrats in the Congress. We met several times before Christmas, and Mick Mulvaney and I traveled, and we met with Leader Schumer, and there we presented a good faith offer to resolve this issue, to achieve a principled compromise, only to find out days after Christmas that the Democrats had stopped negotiations altogether. They're coming here today at your invitation. Our sincere hope is that confronted with these facts and with the information that we will review again today, is that Democrats on Capitol Hill will join Republicans and will join in your call to achieve real border security. And as you said yesterday, we're ready to deal. We have an offer on the table that would reopen the government and achieve border security. I know other senators are talking about fresh ideas, some of which you've reflected on today, and I know we'll give due consideration to those issues, but we owe the American people nothing less than our best efforts, not just to reopen the government, but as you've made clear, to reopen the government once we have the resources to build a wall, a physical barrier, and make measurable progress on achieving real border security.
President Trump is now turning to the Middle East questions.
That Middle East, we inherited a lot of problems. When I became president, I took over a whole lot of problems. The Middle East, the southern border, North Korea, and that was the easy stuff. I think we're going to do well with all of them. Whether we should have ever been in the Middle East or not, that's a question for a lot of people. You know where I come from on that. We're doing something very special, and I follow what I said in the campaign for a long period of time. But we're doing a lot more work and a lot more result than I ever thought that I could do as president. With North Korea, you know how I stand on that. It was rough there for a while before I got elected, and you looked at what was happening, and you look at what's going on right now. The relationships have been very good. Time will tell. And the economy. The economy is doing fantastically well. Unemployment's at a record low. Black, Hispanic, Asian is at the lowest it's ever been in the history of our country. That's tough to beat. The world isn't doing so well, unfortunately. The world does have an impact on us. China's gotten hit hard. Europe is not doing too well. We have to do what we have to do. But we are doing very well. Charles Washington, hoping that we'd see a little action, I'd get a call and say, let's get together and let's work hard. I really believe that Democrats want to see something happen. But you can't have border security without the wall. You can't have border security without a very strong barrier. Call it anything you want. That's got to be very strong. Something that people cannot just walk through. Many of the problems that we've spoken about today will totally disappear.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
This is Shai Ben-Tekoa, and each week I'll be webcasting to you from Judea, origin of the word Jew, a people besieged and beleaguered in every generation. Nazi Germany is but a memory, but in its place the world invented the phantom Palestinians as this generation's internationally authorized Jew killers. Tune in for a different slant on life in Israel, Phantom Nation, every Monday.
Hi, I'm Rabbi David Aaron. The soul basics are the most profound, the most essential, and yet often the most neglected in our education. Join me for Soul Talk on Israel's News Talk Radio and discover the secrets to love, spiritual growth, and personal power.
You can't have border security without a very strong barrier. Call it anything you want. That's got to be very strong. Something that people cannot just walk through. Many of the problems that we've spoken about today will totally disappear. And we're in the process of giving out additional large contracts for many miles of wall in a very important area. And we have a lot less problems now. And I think a lot of the big ones, we're in the process of getting them solved. The southern border would be one. We're in the process of solving problems that a lot of people thought were not solvable. And the easiest way when you don't have a problem that you think is not solvable, don't do anything. Just sit back and enjoy the presidency. But I can't do that because we have a long way to go. This country has a great future with tremendous potential. You know, I've heard numbers as high as $275 billion we lose on illegal immigration. And here you have a wall where you're talking about to complete, because, again, a lot has already been done. $5.6 billion approved by the House is such a small amount compared to the level of the problem. When you see that the Democrats want to give away $12 billion extra, and we're giving away $54 billion in foreign aid. So we give money to countries, but we don't give money to our own country, which is another thing that I've been complaining about, and we're cutting that back. It's very unfair. When we give money to Guatemala and to Honduras and to El Salvador, and they do nothing for us. We give money to Pakistan, $1.3 billion. I ended that. A lot of people don't know it. Because they haven't been fair to us. We want to have a great relationship with Pakistan, but they house the enemy, they take care of the enemy. We just can't do that. So I look forward to meeting the new leadership in Pakistan. We'll be doing that in the not too distant future. But I ended the $1.3 billion that we paid like it was water. So I ended that. And we ended a lot of other money that's being sent out on a monthly basis and a yearly basis to countries that give billions of dollars that don't even vote for us in the United Nations. And you know, it's not all about the rich countries, because the rich countries really do take advantage of us, because they pay a very small percentage of their military, and they cheat on trade. They take advantage of us on trade. Other than that, they're wonderful. But there are countries that are poor. We don't want anything from them. We want to help them. There's some horrible things going on in the world, and we want to help those people. We don't want money from them. We're not looking for that. But when you have massively wealthy countries that have very low military costs because the United States subsidizes them, so they take advantage of us. They could easily pay us the full amount. That's why I got elected. Issues like that. Issues like the border. When they say I'm not popular in Europe, I shouldn't be popular in Europe. If I was popular in Europe, I wouldn't be doing my job, because I want Europe to pay. Germany pays 1%. They should be paying 4%, even more than that. Other countries pay a small percentage of what they should be paying. They do a poll. I was at 88%, and now I'm at a very low number. I don't care about Europe. I'm not elected by Europeans. I'm elected by Americans and by American taxpayers, frankly. I think my relationship with the leaders of Europe is very good. A lot of them don't even understand how they got away with it for so many years. I'll say to Angela, and I'll say to many of the other leaders, I'm friends with all of them, we have negotiations going on with numerous countries right now to pay a lot of money to the United States for what we're doing for them. They've had many, many years where they didn't have to pay. So now they're going to have to pay. And if that makes me unpopular in those countries, that's okay. But we're doing tremendous service to those countries, and they should at least respect us. They didn't respect us. Our country has to be respected. We're not respected when we do that. When horrible things are happening on trade, we have barriers put up, where we have tariffs put on, and we open our country up. We just open it up, where cars are sent into our country with virtually no tax, no nothing. And yet they won't accept our cars. When cars are sent in, they pay no tax, but we're expected to pay 25, 40, 50%. I'll be honest with you, it's just not in my DNA. I don't know how people in my position allow these things to happen. I want people to treat us fairly. And they're not. When a country sends us 200 soldiers to Iraq, or sends us 100 soldiers from a big country to Syria or to Afghanistan, and then they tell me 100 times, oh, we sent you soldiers, we sent you soldiers. And that's 1/100th of the money that they're taking advantage of. They're just doing that to make me happy, or to make past presidents happy. I've heard past presidents, well, they're involved in the Afghanistan war, because they sent us 100 soldiers, and yet it's costing us billions and billions of dollars. I could give you an example where I get along very well with India and Prime Minister Modi, but he's constantly telling me he built a library in Afghanistan. You know what that is? That's like 5 hours of what we spend. And we're supposed to say, oh, thank you for the library. I don't like being taken advantage of. What other countries have done for the last long period of time is give us some soldiers and then talk about it like it's the end of the world, and we're subsidizing their militaries by billions and billions and billions of dollars, many, many, many times what those soldiers cost that country. We've done a lot. I don't think anybody would have been able to do the tax cuts like I did. We got the greatest tax cuts ever. We got Anwar approved in the tax cuts. We got rid of the individual mandate, which essentially is repeal and replace of Obamacare. Obamacare is only kept because of the individual mandate. Now that that's gone, I don't know how you can possibly keep it. So that's repeal and replace. We will sit down with the Democrats and we will come up with great health care. Far better. We'll have everything included. Far better, because Obamacare is too expensive, the premiums are way too high, and the deductibles don't exist. The deductibles are so high. Unless you get hit by a tractor, you can't even use it. Nobody's ever seen anything like it. Obamacare is a tremendous failure.
On the fighting in Afghanistan, he has this to say.
You can talk about our generals. I gave our generals all the money they wanted. They didn't do such a great job in Afghanistan. They've been fighting in Afghanistan for 19 years. General Mattis thanked me profusely for getting him $700 billion. He couldn't believe it. General Mattis thanked me even more the following year when I got him $716 billion. He couldn't believe it because our military was depleted. Now we're rebuilding our military. We're getting F-35 fighter jets and F-18s and all of the things we're doing, including ships and missiles and everything. But General Mattis was so thrilled. Well, what's he done for me? How has he done in Afghanistan? Not too good. I'm not happy with what he's done in Afghanistan, and I shouldn't be happy. And I wish him well. I hope he does well. But as you know, President Obama fired him, and essentially so did I. I want results. We are talking to the Taliban. We're talking to a lot of different people. But here's the thing. India is there. Russia is there. Russia used to be the Soviet Union. Afghanistan made it Russia because they went bankrupt fighting in Afghanistan. Russia, Pakistan is there. They should be fighting, but Russia should be fighting. The reason Russia in Afghanistan was because terrorists were going into Russia. They were right to be there. The problem is it was a tough fight, and literally they went bankrupt. They went into being called Russia again as opposed to the Soviet Union. You know, a lot of these places you're reading about now are no longer part of Russia because of Afghanistan. But why isn't Russia there? Why isn't India there? Why isn't Pakistan there? Why are we there? We're 6,000 miles away. But I don't mind. We want to help other nations. And I'll give you an example. So Taliban is our enemy. ISIS is our enemy. We have an area that I brought up with our generals 4 or 5 weeks ago where Taliban is here, ISIS is here, and they're fighting each other. I said, why don't you let them fight? Why are we getting in the middle of it? They're both our enemies. Let them fight. And they end up fighting both of them. It's the craziest thing I've ever seen. And what are we doing? But I say this, India, Russia, you look at some of the satellite countries that are extremely wealthy with oil surrounding. I said to a certain country, very rich country, what would you do if the United States pulled out? Oh, we'd be taken over by the Taliban and terrorists. I said, then why are you charging us when we have to use your country to send product through? Why are you charging us when we send airplanes over your country? We're doing the job for you. Why are you charging us? He said to me, very great gentleman, smart. He said to me, well, nobody ever asked me not to. I said, I'm asking you not to. He said, we will not charge you. And I'm talking about millions and millions of dollars. Flights over his country. But I say to him, what would happen if we weren't here? And he looks at me and he goes, we would be overrun. We could not defend ourselves. And yet he charges us, but he doesn't charge us anymore.
Much has been said and written about President Trump's announcements that he's pulling his troops out of Syria. So, what is the truth?
I know somebody said 4 months. I didn't say that either. We're getting out of Syria. We don't want Syria. Obama gave up Syria years ago when he didn't violate the red line. I did when I shot 59 missiles in, but that was a long time later. And when President Obama decided not to violate his statement that never crossed the red line, and then they did, he didn't do anything about it. You know, making a threat is okay, but you always have to follow through with the threat. If you're going to make that threat, you can't make a threat and then do nothing. So Syria was lost long ago. And besides that, we're not talking about, you know, vast wealth. We're talking about sand and death. That's what we're talking about, sand and death. The Kurds, it's very interesting. Turkey doesn't like them. Other people do. I didn't like the fact that they're selling the small oil that they have to Iran. And we asked them not to sell it to Iran. But the Kurds are selling oil to Iran. We're not thrilled about that. I'm not happy about it at all. At the same time, they fight better when we fight with them. We want to protect the Kurds, but I don't want to be in Syria forever. It's sand, and it's death. And when we kill ISIS, if we don't, now everyone says, oh, then they'll come to our country. Well, that's possibly true, a very small percentage. But you know where else they're going? To Iran, who hates ISIS more than we do. They're going to Russia, who hates ISIS more than we do. So we're killing. And then I read when we pull out, oh, Russia's thrilled. Russia's not happy. You know why they're not happy? Because they like it when we're killing ISIS, because we're killing them for them. And we're killing them for Assad. And we're killing ISIS also for Iran. And just while we're on Iran, because, you know, people don't like to write the facts, Iran is a much different country than it was when I became president. And every part of the Middle East and other places that was under attack because of Iran. And I said to myself, wow. You look at Yemen, you look at Syria, you look at every place. Saudi Arabia was under siege. I mean, they wanted Yemen because of the long border with Saudi Arabia. That's why they're there. But every place was under siege. And I actually asked the question, how do you stop these people? They're all over the place. They had plenty of money. President Obama had just given them $150 billion. He just gave $1.8 billion in cash. I'm still trying to figure that one out, Mick. In cash, plane loads of cash. I mean, cash from five different countries. You know why from five different countries, Jeff? Because we didn't have enough cash in the tri-state area. So they had to use the currency of other countries. That's the real reason. So with all of that being said, I did something called terminate the horrible Iran nuclear deal, which, by the way, in 8 years gives Iran the legal right to have nuclear weapons. I did it. Iran is no longer the same country. Iran is pulling people out of Syria. They're pulling people out of Yemen. Iran wants to survive now. Iran was a power in the Middle East. They were going to take over the whole Middle East and destroy Israel while they're at it. Iran is a much different country right now. They're having riots every week in every city, bigger than they've ever had before. Their currency is under siege. A lot of bad things are happening. All of the things that we've done monetarily to Iran, Iran is in trouble. And you know what? I'd love to negotiate with Iran. They're not ready yet, I don't think. But they will be. When I took over 2 years ago, Iran was going to take over the Middle East and who knows where, and they were going to have all the nuclear weapons they wanted in a very short period of time because of that stupid deal. When I terminated that deal, when I met with the generals in Iraq, I said to a couple of the generals, I said, why did you do this before? He said, sir, our commanders were telling us what to do. I said, well, don't you tell them? No, sir, we take orders. I do it differently. I sat around. And after a few minutes, they listened up and they said, this is what we should do. But we were supposed to be out of Syria many years ago. If you remember, we went to Syria for some spot hits, and that was 5 years ago, and we never left. I don't want to be in Syria. And I see soldiers that are so badly injured and hurt. I don't want that. I don't want it. And I want to rebuild our country. And I want to spend money on our military without depleting it every day. And that's what's happening. And our military is getting really strong. And you know what? I want the Democrats to join in it too.
Back to the southern border.
The 5.6 billion is such a small number. It's 1 month in Afghanistan. And we're talking about national security. This isn't just a border. This is national security. This is health and wellness. This is everything.
Here, President Trump is talking more about DACA.
And I talk also DACA, but I just think that we're better off waiting for the Supreme Court. If the Supreme Court rules that President Obama was wrong, which they should, if President Obama is allowed to do what he did on DACA, then I'm allowed to do whatever I want to do on things that probably a president doesn't have the right to do. It's too important a subject to walk away from. I was here on Christmas evening. I was all by myself in the White House. It's a big, big house.
Oh, didn't Vice President Mike Pence say earlier that he, too, was at the White House over Christmas? Ah, well.
Except for all the guys out on the lawn with machine guns. Secret Service and military. These are great people. They don't even smile. But I was hoping that maybe somebody would come back and negotiate. But they didn't do that. And that's okay. Look, this is really something that should be bipartisan. I hope it is. If the Supreme Court would do a great favor to this country, if they would say the president should not have done that, we will settle this whole thing, including really a big immigration policy, not just border security, which is very important. Most Republicans are fine with some deal on DACA. DACA is okay. These are people that have been in the country a long time. In many cases, they don't even speak the language of the country from which their parents came.
More about the wall.
When they say the wall's immoral, well, then you better got to do something about the Vatican, because the Vatican has the biggest wall of them all. The wall is immoral. Look at all of the countries that have walls, and they work 100%. I mean, we could have all the drones flying over the people last night as they tried to rush the border. The only thing that stopped them was the wall. If we have drones up there, it's wonderful. We'll get nice pictures. As long as I'm here, I want to do it right. And I'm not only talking here, I'm talking about Middle East problems and other problems and North Korea. I don't know why, but they like me. They say I'm the most popular president in the history of the Republican Party. You see the same polls as I do. Hard to believe, considering I never get fair press or good press. Because people see the job we're doing. People see the gasoline is way down. And the reason it's way down is because I called up some of the OPEC people. I say, don't do it. You know, if you look back a few months, gasoline was at $83 a barrel. That was going to be bad. And it was going to 100, and some people were saying 125, Rick. And I made calls. I said, you better let that oil, that gasoline flow. And they did. And now it's down to 44. And I put out a social media statement yesterday. I said, do you think it's luck that that happened? It's not luck. I called up certain people, and I said, let that damn oil and gasoline flow. It was going up to $125. If that would have happened, then you would have had a recession, depression, like we've had in the past when that happened.
It's Lashon Hara time.
We're really succeeding in things that people thought were impossible to do. So I think that Mitt Romney hopefully will be a team player. And if he's not, that's okay too. Look, I handle it. I mean, I just got rid of, I wouldn't say that. They say they retired. They say that Bob Corker retired. They say that Jeff Flake, wonderful guy. I never even met him, and he's hitting me. He was going to tell people how to win in 2020 because 2016 can't. He wrote a book about it. Didn't work out too well, that book, because we won in 2016 because we didn't want to wait till 2020. Jeff Flake is now selling real estate or whatever he's doing. He'll probably go to work for CNN. That's my prediction. Bob Corker, unfortunately, you know, had a good relationship. Then he thought he was going to get some publicity for himself. And his ratings tooped, where he couldn't have come in fourth in the primary. Bob Corker was going to be a senator for another 20 years. And then for some reason, he hit me because he thought it was going to be good publicity. It didn't work out too well. We have some great Republicans. And if you look at the way they're standing up for border security, you'd be very proud of them. If you're a Republican or if you're a person that loves our nation. Thank you very much, everybody.
And with that, I end. Please tell me how you assess Donald Trump. You can write to me at walter@israelnewstalkradio.com or place a comment on the Walter Bingham File page on the website. In the meantime, I have become a year older, but no wiser. With God's help, I shall be back again next week with more from Israel and the rest of the Jewish world. We live in exciting and fast-moving times. Until then, this is Walter Bingham wishing you a good week, and please don't forget that it's getting very cold now, so it's absolutely important that you see if your elderly neighbor is warm enough and has enough food in the house. Goodbye.
Israel News Talk Radio's chat room. Just click the orange button at the top of the IsraelNewsTalkRadio.home page, log in as yourself or an anonymous guest, and join in on the fun. You'll meet other listeners from all over the world who listen to Israel News Talk Radio, and you can make new friends. Israel News Talk Radio's chat room. It's the closest you can get to being in the studio with us.
We love listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Where can you get the inside news on Israel? At Israel News Talk Radio, we're dedicated to sharing Israel's inside story with the world by providing our listeners with news on Israeli politics, current affairs, and Israeli Jewish culture. The Israel News Talk Radio homepage also provides you, the listener, with useful information at your fingertips, with scrolling news headlines, weather, currency exchange, Shabbat candlelighting times, and so much more. Our radio programming is always accessible and on demand. We operate absolutely free of charge for everyone, everywhere. If you love what we do, partner with us now by becoming an Israel News Talk Radio supporter. With your support, you'll be inscribed on our Israel News Talk Radio Wall of Fame. There's nothing like us in the world. Be part of something great. Israel News Talk Radio, straight talk from Israel.
If you love Israel News Talk Radio, then you'll love our Facebook page. We keep you up to date on what's happening in Israel, plus little surprise treasures that we don't share on the radio. Go now to follow us on Facebook. Just look for the Israel News Talk Radio Facebook page, and don't forget to subscribe and follow us by clicking on the like button. We post great stuff there that you'll want to share. Israel News Talk Radio on Facebook and Israel News Radio on Twitter.
News, opinion, and more. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.